Hey, good Sunday evening, everybody. Welcome into the Rocky Top Rewind here on the BallQuest.com YouTube channel. I'm Eric Kane alongside Brent Hubbs. Tennessee, a 33-14 winner over Mississippi State to improve to 8-1 on the season and 5-1 in Southeastern Conference play. We're going to take your questions over the course of the next hour, 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern time here on the YouTube channel. We'll speak with Jake Rowe, who is with Dogs HQ, to get a scout on the Georgia Bulldogs. That's coming up at 8:15. Matt Ray will check in with us about 8:45, and we're going to have some fun here on the Rocky Top Rewind, presented each and every Sunday during football season by our friends over at Spivey, King & Spivey LLP. If you got a problem, let them find a solution for you, TN Trial Lawyers. That phone number for a free consultation is 423-245-4185, and you can visit them online at SpiveyKingAndSpiveyLLP.com. Brent Hubbs, again, it wasn't pretty. It was ugly at times, but also impressive in some other areas. Tennessee does what it needs to do. It handles Mississippi State 33-14 to get a win, to set up a showdown in Athens. But, of course, the biggest story, the biggest takeaway is the injuries, right? Nico didn't play the second half. Dante Thornton exits. Andre Keurig didn't play the second half. Javonte Spraggins in and out of the lineup. Of course, Deshaun Bishop, Tyree West didn't play. A lot more notable on the injury situation than the win itself coming from Neyland Stadium last night.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think everybody wants to know about Nico and what's the situation there. And I mean, he left the stadium, without any kind of bracing or anything on. He had a towel over his head. There's a tweet, a video, and everybody want to know what's in his left hand. It's a Gator light bottle. It was some nutrients and replenishment fluids, if you will. It's an upper body deal, and typically what that means is he had some symptoms, he had some things going on when they went in at the half. I think the more they evaluated him, the more they decided he did not need to come back out and play. And not only did he not come back out, he didn't come back out to the field to stand there and watch, because remember, they're doing light shows and strobe lights and loud music and all the things that's going on there. They felt like it was in the best interest to leave him in the locker room. What does that mean for this week? We're not going to know, okay? I mean, Josh Heupel's going to tell you tomorrow what he told you Saturday. Feel good about where he's at. Feel like he's going to be fine. And then we'll see what the injury report looks like Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. But I'll be surprised if Josh Heupel comes out tomorrow and says, yeah, everything's good, there's no big deal. I mean, he's practiced and all those types of things. We'll see how much he practices this week. We'll see how he feels. I think they'll be cautious with him early in the week, and we'll see where it's at Tuesday and Wednesday.
Yeah, obviously, huge football game coming up between the Hedges, Tennessee and Georgia. We'll see where both those teams rank in the college football playoff rankings. Georgia took one to Ole Miss, took a loss to Ole Miss, 28-10. Tennessee did win over Mississippi State, so Georgia's going to be frustrated. Georgia's going to be playing for its playoff lives, all that and more. And, of course, Tennessee needs to continue on winning. And, we talk about that every single week, and we'll talk about that on the BallQuest podcast. But I do want to, on this football game, before we get to Jake Rowe coming up on Georgia, there was red zone inefficiencies again. We've talked about that. Tennessee's defense, rush defense wasn't great, but end of the day, give up 14 points, less than 300 yards total offense. I want to start with the explosives on offense. And you wrote in your 10 things, you were kind of tracking it, going from, Alabama, Florida, Kentucky, and I guess Arkansas the last four games. Tennessee, what was it, three plays of 30-plus yards? And in this game against Mississippi State, Tennessee had three touchdowns of 30-plus yards. That was good to see a return to this offense, the explosive plays.
Yeah, and there's a couple of questions over there about Nico being late with some throws. He underthrew Dante Thornton on the touchdown there. I mean, he underthrew that one pretty significantly. He was not late with the ball, in my opinion, on the Squirrel White touchdown. The other Squirrel White deep throw that they missed, I thought Squirrel stumbled on the break, and I thought because of that, Nico kind of double pumped it or clutched it a little bit, and then cranked it up, and that was an overthrow there. But I think that was more on Squirrel's route than it was on Nico's timing from that standpoint. So I didn't think he was late with the ball per se. That's a Mississippi State defense, not very good. Okay. The quarterback should have been comfortable in the pocket. You should have had a nice pocket. They don't sack the quarterback. I think they've got 7 sacks all season long or some ridiculously low number like that. That should have been a big day for the passing game. And I think it had a chance to be, you know, but you didn't play Nico in the second half. And, that, you know, that changed the way that you played that game and the way that you managed that game there. But I get some of the frustration that, that some people are talking about in the chat over here to the side about, you know, the offensive play calling. It doesn't feel like there's a ton of creativity in the red zone. You know, that there's some things it feels like it's a little bit predictable right now. There's sometimes I wish it was more predictable, to be honest with you. I mean, if the DBs are playing 8-10 yards off the ball, I'd take the 5-yard out. You know, I mean, you played, I wrote this in 10 things too. I mean, you played 12 personnel the whole game, but you only targeted the tight ends twice. You know, so it feels like the, it feels like it's kind of all over the map sometimes. Like they're getting everything on the call sheet, and instead of just kind of riding what's there, it's like they'll raise up and throw back-to-back receiver screens to Chris Brazel, and then they go completely away from that for the next three or four drives. It just it feels like it's pretty sporadic on kind of what they do play calling. So I get some of the frustration with that.
So Nico doesn't play the second half. Tennessee had a 13-point lead at that point in time, thanks to just stealing 3 points there at the end. And I thought that was – you know, Levy was calling timeout, trying to preserve time for his offense. Two incompletions, and then the guy runs out of bounds. You know, like, what are you doing there? Tennessee gets the football back. Boo has a great punt return, 23 yards. He was phenomenal in punt returning, and we talked about it on the postgame mini pod. But you know, he's who we thought that you know should have been back there the entire time. You gotta be able to make guys miss. You gotta be fearless back there a little bit. You need to be smart. He'll learn when to fair catch and all that. But of course, that punt return was huge. Tennessee runs the ball one time, see if they can pop something, call a timeout, the play to squirrel there, and then, of course, the 38-yarder and the celebration from Max Gilbert, who missed 5 of his last 6 kicks, hit 2 in a row in the span of 46 seconds. So Tennessee led 20-7 entering the halftime break. And then out trots Gasson Moore, spotted with a 13-point lead. You lean on the run game. You run your offense. I mean, they let him throw it a little bit. What did you think from Gasson Moore? And I think there's two different conversations. You know, Gasson Moore, if he's your starter in Georgia, and we'll get to that later on. But Gasson Moore doing what you need to do to win a football game, and I thought he did that the other day.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, a veteran backup quarterback supposed to manage you and get you home. And he did that. He managed the game. They didn't have a bunch of false starts. They didn't have delay games. They didn't look like the Keystone Cops going a bunch of different directions. And I think there was one throw that he threw it in a window where he thought the receiver was going to set down, and instead the receiver kept going. I don't remember which receiver it was. So the ball was behind him. I think that was a miscommunication more than it was a physical errant throw. But then the deep stuff that they threw where they got the flags on, I mean, those were safe throws. I mean, just throw it out there because they're in man coverage. They don't have any help over the top with the way their safeties were playing. So just throw it out there and see if you hit one or get a flag, and they got a couple of flags there that helped them. And he did what you needed him to do and what quite frankly, what he should do as a fifth year player in this offense. He should go out and execute that thing without a bunch of hiccups and all those types of things. Now, can he make all the throws you need him to make to win a 60-minute football game? I don't know about all that, but he did what he needed to do to get that game home, and you were comfortable with him doing it because of how well he knows this offense and how comfortable he is in it.
Yeah, I thought the deep passes down the sideline, even with Nico to Dante, it was you know, man-on-man coverage, one-on-one coverage there, and he underthrew it. He overshot a receiver earlier in the game. Underthrew it, let Dante Thornton, your big play guy, go out and make a play, and he did just that, and you know, that was a 73-yarder, but the throws to Squirrel. Squirrel did a great job adjusting back to it, slowing down and drawing the flag. Brew trying to – I mean, that was a really good throw to Brew. He was interfered with. There was another one that was called, and I thought there should have been another one to Squirrel on the near sideline. I thought he was held.
Oh, big time.
Yeah, big time. You didn't even see it on the replay on TV, but I saw it in real time. But no, I thought Gasson Moore did a really, really good job. Let's talk about the rush defense, because that's been the thing that's been so glaring the last 2 weeks. Again, another game where Tennessee holds its opponent to less than 20 points. That's 10 straight dating back to the bowl game. Held Mississippi State less than 300 yards total offense. Great on third downs, forced 2 turnovers. Again, this defense is good, and this defense played well yesterday with the exception of rush defense. Kentucky was all over them, and so was Mississippi State.
Well, there's a difference between good and elite. Okay, yeah. Josh Heupel called his defense elite after the Alabama game. They have not been elite the last 2 weeks. They've been good, you know, they've forced some turnovers and things that you need to do, but they have not been elite because of what they've given up in rush defense. I don't know everything schematically. J.B. Collins has got a question over there about Elijah Simmons and why his snap count has gone down. His snap count's gone down because he's got to play his gap responsibility. You know, I mean, you can't go in there and freelance, you know, and it feels like maybe there's some guys trying to do too much, you know, which is kind of crazy because you would thought if they were going to do that, it would be at the beginning of the year when there was such a heavy rotation, you didn't know your snap count, man, I got to get mine. I mean, you've played a whole season with this kind of rotation. You know what your snap count's going to look like. So I don't think it's guys suddenly being so aggressive that they're getting themselves in trouble, but clearly the defensive front and the linebackers are not tied in as well as they were earlier in the year. Is that Keenan Peely's absence? Probably there's some of that to that. There's something to that. Do I think the defensive linemen are not doing some of their responsibilities? Yeah, I think there's some of that as well. That 18, 19 yard run they popped, that Mississippi State popped coming off the goal line, I mean, that should have popped with the way that Tennessee lined up defensively in their front. Against what Mississippi State was doing. I mean, they put Jeremiah Tealander one-on-one with the pulling tight end. And even if Tealander gets around the block, the running back's going to cut the other way and make him miss. I mean, he tried to square that up and just try to clog it up till some help arrived, but the safeties were deep. There was no help. The middle of the field was open. That's got to be some kind of bust, in my opinion. So I think it's a combination of some things going on right now. I don't think this defensive line's playing – they've not played at their best the last 2 weeks. They got to get back to that this week. And I think the linebackers have to play better. And collectively, those two have to be tied in and play better against the run than what they've been.
We got Jake Rowe coming up here in just a couple of seconds. But before we get to him, Brent, I want to get your thoughts quickly on Dylan Sampson. Looked kind of bad there in the second quarter. He was hurt. He was in pain. He walked off, but he walked off slowly. He went to the locker room ahead of the halftime break a little bit early. It felt like you're probably not going to see him. He wasn't out there for the first series of the second half, I don't believe. Yeah, he wasn't. But then he comes back, and he comes back strong, and he has a career day. He had 30 carries, 149 yards. His 33-yard touchdown run looked really good with the bend back. You could tell that he wasn't feeling his best. Certainly after the game, you could see that he was in some pain. But another career performance, and gosh, where would the Tennessee offense be without Dylan Sampson?
They'd be in trouble. And I'm going to tell you right now, there's a couple things about Dylan Sampson I didn't know when he came out of high school. One, he's got more power than I ever imagined he would have. Now, part of that's the work he's put in when he got to college. But I thought he was pretty much a speed guy. He's so much more than just a speed guy. Mm-hmm. The other thing he is friggin' tough, man. I mean, he is tough because I'm going to tell you, it's not just the ankle that's bothering him. I mean, he's been beat and banged up the last few weeks. He's doing a good job of trying to take care of his body. But you saw him leave when he got out. That was not a walk of, I'm going to favor a tender ankle. That was a, my body's hurting right now walk. Like, yeah. Multiple things are hurting right now. And I'm sure he hurts after every ball game. But they need him to, you know, they need him to be ready to go on Saturday. He'll be there because he shows up. And he's gonna have to grit it out again. But I mean, he absolutely decided at the half, I'm good, let's go, tape it and let's go. And that's what he did. And kudos to him because he was important for them in the second half. And I think his toughness is something this offense needs. You know, I think it rubs off on people. And I think he showed his toughness again in the second half against Mississippi State. Impressed with just how tough he is. I mean, mentally and physically tough. Guy's a good football player. Really good football player.
SEC leader in carries, SEC leader in rushing yards, and one of the nation leaders in touchdowns. That is Dylan Sampson. Hey, when we come back here on the Rockets Out Rewind, going to chat with Jake Rowe of Dogs HQ, give the scout on the Georgia Bulldogs. But first, I want to tell you guys about my friends over at Spivey King and Spivey LLP. You got a problem, let them find a solution for you. TN Trial Lawyers have over 80 years of combined experience. Spivey King and Spivey LLP provides representation throughout state and federal courts of Northeast Tennessee. They specialize in criminal defense, family law, personal injuries, divorce, custody, alimony, all that good stuff. Personal injuries such as wrecks. The firm's got a vast amount of trial experience. Practice has been in place for 43 years. This specific partnership formed in 2012. Also have partners who are energized and ready for today's modern legal demands. Practice primarily in Northeast Tennessee, the Tri-Cities of Sullivan County, Hawkins County, Washington County, and surrounding areas. Whether you've been injured in a car accident, need help with a divorce, help with custody of your children, or have been accused of a crime, Spivey King and Spivey LLP is here to help you. Matthew A. Spivey, J. Matt King, and Richard A. Spivey, good guys, Tennessee fans just like you and I, 142 Cherokee Street, Kingsport, Tennessee. You can pick up the phone and dial for a free consultation at 423-245-4185. That is 423-245-4185, or online at SpiveyKingAndSpiveyLLP.com. Spivey King and Spivey LLP. You got a problem? Let them find the solution for you. That is TN Trial Lawyer. Hey, welcome back into the Rocky Top Rewind Sunday nights here at VolQuest.com and on the YouTube channel. I'm Eric Kane alongside Brent Hubbs, and I'm going to welcome onto the show Jake Rowe of Dogs HQ, the On3 affiliate of covering Georgia. And of course, there's a big one coming up this weekend, Tennessee and Georgia. Jake, thanks for joining us, man. How you doing?
I'm good, fellas. How are y'all?
Doing good.
Doing really well. Obviously, not the outcome Georgia wanted this past weekend, falling to Ole Miss 28-10. Knowing how important of a football game this is coming up against Tennessee, college football playoff, you know, chances hanging by a thread for, you know, if you want to look at it, for Tennessee too, potentially. How big is this weekend, and kind of where's the fan base right now? Obviously, Sunday night coming off a loss.
There's nothing good, man, not as far as fans go. You know, it's one of those things. I'm listen, we all look at each other's boards, I think, from time to time. And I think I saw a Tennessee board after a win earlier this year at some point. I can't remember who it was, but it was all doom and gloom. And listen, I get it. They care a lot. And Georgia got a taste of its own medicine on Saturday. You know, I was thinking after that game, I was listening to Lane Kiffin talking the press box. They were playing the sound over the press box, and I was like, man, I've covered some of these games. I've covered the other side of some of these games where, you know, you go into the big one and Georgia just kind of suffocates the other team, and they got a taste of what that felt like on Saturday. Ole Miss was better, outplayed them, outcoached them, and Georgia's got to go back to the drawing board. They get to come back home, though, which is somewhere they haven't been in a month.
Yeah, I started to say a night game at home is a nice refresh, nice way to kind of bounce back if you're Georgia, because you haven't had any of those anytime soon. What's the bigger concern for you covering this team, Jake, as you come out of this Ole Miss deal? Is it the fact that Carson Beck is struggling the way he has struggled, or was it the physicality that Ole Miss played with against Georgia's run game and kind of what Ole Miss did in the line of scrimmage? Kind of what's your overriding concerns for Georgia coming out of that loss?
I kind of came away from it fairly a little bit more encouraged. Carson was taking better care of the ball. That was the main thing with the previous games, was the interceptions. He was coming up with a drive and making plays. I don't think Carson's playing at his best right now, but I thought he took some steps in the right direction on Saturday. I'm more concerned with just the offensive line in general, Brent, because Ernest Green's playing left tackle right now. He's got no business doing that because he's banged up. I don't think he practiced all of last week. If he did, it was very little. Dylan Fairchild's banged up at left guard. He's starting to get a little bit better. They're playing their third, fourth option at right guard right now. They've had to play their second string center. I know I'm preaching to the choir on offensive line injuries here, because Tennessee's had their fair share too. But the thing with Georgia is it's kind of hit them all at once here, and it hasn't stopped. You know, they thought they were going to get Tate Ratledge back, and he just keeps kind of aggravating and can't quite go. Micah Morris went down last week against Florida. They've kind of lost him for a little bit. Both of those guys are right guards. Xavier Truss has played like three or four different positions for him again this year after doing the same thing last year. Monroe Freeling's flipping and playing between right and left tackle. He's never started a game in his career, but now he's got a lot of snaps under his belt, and they're just – it's not just the run game. They're having a really tough time protecting too. And when they do get things going, they had two or three really successful first down plays against Ole Miss. A couple of them to start a drive, they have a five-yard penalty to pull them back. And honestly, Brent, I feel like I'm saying some of the same stuff that Tennessee fans have probably been saying about that football team all year long.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, you know, line play is so challenging. And I think in the day and age of the transfer portal, it's even harder, because I think that's a position that's hard to bring in a bunch of fix-it guys, right?
It is.
Because you got to get continuity, you got to get chemistry, they got to learn your system. I wonder if the offensive line struggles, what kind of effect that's had on Carson with his eyes and maybe some of the recklessness with his football, with the football. Do you think that's something that has bothered him? That's a question we had from one of our guys here in the chat. Do you think the offensive line and the lack of clean pocket has caused him to maybe be a little more reckless or a little more loose with the ball?
Yeah, I think so. If you look at some of those throws, they were ones where Carson's got to do something with it a lot quicker than he wanted to do something with it. And, you know, just sometimes you make a bad decision. No quarterback plays better under pressure. I do know that. Not a single one. You're not going to find their numbers being better under pressure than a clean pocket, not over a long period of time. So that's definitely played into it. I think also some of it's just pressing. You know, this is a guy that came into the season with high expectations on himself. You know, listen, when you come back with a big price tag in NIL, the player knows it. They know it, and they're less professionally and emotionally mature than a 28, 29-year-old who just signs a brand-new contract is to handle that and the pressures of it. And I think all of that's kind of gotten to Carson. It's the growing pains we're going to go through this whole thing. And I feel bad for him because I think Georgia fans and even, you know, fans on top of that, Carson was flashy with it, right? And that's the price you pay. But I feel bad because you talk to people in the NIL space and they're like, this kid's not a diva. He's not really into this. He's more into kind of football and doing his own thing. But he wanted a chance to kind of make some big money coming back. And so all that's kind of getting thrown up in his face right now. But I will say that Carson, like a lot of quarterbacks, has been a much better quarterback at home this year in limited opportunity and especially last year. So that's something, especially taking care of the ball better at home. He's got one game in his entire career where he has more than one turnover at home. So that's something that maybe he can lean his hat on, but he's going to have to get some protection, some help from the offensive line.
Jake, we talked a lot about the offense. Let's look at the defense. I mean, Georgia's always, you know, just producing talent at the NFL level, the defensive line, linebackers, you know, all three levels, really. A couple of performances this year, obviously a really bad half against Alabama, a really, really bad football game against Alabama overall. But you know, 28 points to Ole Miss the other day. You know, you look up and down the schedule, and they've obviously played very, very well at times, but given up some points in some other games. So tell us about this defense a little bit for those of us that haven't watched Georgia every single weekend.
You know, it's kind of whack-a-mole with them too a little bit. It's like it's a different issue here and there. You know, it's pass rush not there this week. The giving up too many easy throws the next week, giving up too many explosive throws. Missed tackles were an issue early in the season that kind of came back and haunted them a little bit against Ole Miss. I would say if I had to point to one aspect of this team, I think it's got a very strong run defense. It's not a dominant run defense, but they really do a good job of kind of figuring you out and kind of keeping you from hitting a lot of big plays on them, much better than last year's run defense that Tennessee got to see on the first play of the game last year. But they've been more consistent in that regard. They've shown the ability to kind of pull out pass rush on demand a little bit. They did it against Texas. They did it early against Ole Miss, but Ole Miss kind of solved it. It's a little bit of this, a little bit of that, but ultimately a very talented defense that it's really tough to score on them when they get into the red zone. Ole Miss had some stuff, you know, tough times with that. I mean, it's up and down. But this defense doesn't really have, I don't think, an identity. I just think it's one of those teams. They go out there and they just kind of let it all hang out. And sometimes they're going to make a lot of havoc plays on you, and sometimes they're going to kind of give up some plays. But they fight hard, and they're tough to kind of punch the ball in the end zone on.
Jake, this feels like a Kirby Smart, like tailor-made Kirby Smart week. I mean, he's, you know, they're going to be behind Tennessee in the playoff rankings. You're coming back home. This is going to be, you know, everybody's coming to steal your lunch money. You know what I mean? That this is the circle, the wagons. Everybody's kind of against you. They've written you off for dead. He seems to thrive in these moments with his program. Why do you think that is the case? I know that's an easy way to motivate kids, but how does he make that work the way he has? And do you see this as that type of game with him?
Yeah, I think they'll try to pull those strings. And Brent, I think when you combine – I'm always weary – you're always leery of being that guy who covers a team and talks them up too much. You know, like you guys know. Remember, Brent, you've done this for a long time. You just – I know you probably kind of went in and out of this, man, and it's kind of one of those things that's like, you know, but Georgia prepares hard. And sure. I think everybody knows that now. Those Tuesday and those Wednesday practices are very hard. And I think when you can add on top of that the doubt, the nobody thinks you can get it done, everybody thinks you're going to lose this weekend type deal, then when you can heap that on to very detail-oriented and very intense preparation, you just get a level of focus out of those guys. And they end up being more prepared for the moment. They end up being excited for the moment because they put in that amount of work and get there. And I think that's where it kind of comes in. But ultimately, and that's where it's sustainable, right? That's where it's not, you know, hey, the first big play of the game or the first big rush of adrenaline and it's gone. You know, your preparation kind of lasts for four quarters. And that's where it's kind of come through. You know, it's the line on this game blew me away. Last time Georgia visited Sanford Stadium, they were a 10-point dog. Now they're a 9-point dog. And I feel – I know Tennessee was the number one team then, but Georgia was a lot better than it is now. And I guess Tennessee may be too, just top to bottom. I don't know. But that one's kind of got me, thrown me for a loop there, because I really feel like Georgia needs this to be a low-scoring game to win it. And I'm sure Tennessee actually feels the same way.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, Tennessee's going to go into, you know, Georgia and a place where it had played well the last couple of trips down there, obviously. To come back with all that momentum, still being just a one-loss team, what does Tennessee need to do to exploit Georgia on Saturday to come away with that win?
Whoever plays quarterback, whether it's Nico, which I feel like it probably will be, or whoever, they've got to hit those downfield shots. You know, that honestly, if you want to talk about Tennessee's chances to beat Georgia the last couple of years, a couple of those early ones would have gone a long way. Not 2023 so much, but 2021 and 2022 there and in Athens, I think they missed some chances. But I think Tennessee, if they're going to beat Georgia in Athens, they need to hit some of those deep shots. I've watched Nico this year, and he's missed some. But when he's hit them, it's looked like, man, I don't know if anybody in the world could have defended that pass. That was something special. And I think they got to let Nico loose in the run game a little bit, which, you know, when you're battling injury, I don't know which way they'll go with that. But Georgia can kind of struggle a little bit, especially when they jump into man coverage, lose a little bit of contain. You know, quarterback Jackson Dart did it the other day. That's the only reason Ole Miss had respectable run numbers. He ripped off a 30-yarder just kind of waiting for Georgia's coverage to run off. And I think Nico has the skill set to do that too. And obviously, if you can get the run game going there with Dylan Sampson, nobody's been able to stop it. I'm not saying Georgia's going to. I just think it's probably going to be one of the tougher challenges he's had. Doing it on the road, it's always tougher for O-lines to play on the road. Doing it on the road, it might be a little tougher for him too. But I think, what is it, like 9 out of 10 100-yard games or 8 out of 9 100-yard games for him this year?
Yep, all but one. On the road at Oklahoma, Brent?
Yeah, I mean, and that was just kind of Tennessee trying to get home a little bit there. I mean, he's been terrific, but Tennessee has not run the football against Georgia. I mean, Tennessee's run for 2,000 yards every year Josh Heupel's been here, but the team they haven't run the football very well against is Georgia. I know they ripped off the big run last year, but you take that big run out of there.
Yeah, you're right.
Georgia, after that, there was nothing happening in the run game.
And low-key, Georgia hasn't run it against Tennessee either. You know, like Georgia's kind of come in with some good run games, and last year Georgia's run game was clicking. It was on fire. Kendall Milton was rolling, and I think that was the only team kind of down the stretch that was able to kind of do that. They did it in 2020. Did it in 2022 as well. I mean, even then, you know, they even forced a fumble and Georgia didn't run it all that great then. So it's both of these teams have had trouble getting the ground game going the past few years.
I feel like for Tennessee, they've got to run the football. If they can't run the football effectively, it's going to be really hard down there. Where maybe Georgia can get away with not having an elite run game or a great run game in this one. Where do you think Georgia is, before we let you go, where do you think they are from a playmaker standpoint? I know, like everybody, I mean, Mike Bobo, I'm sure, is a whipping boy today for the Georgia fans. Every time they see the Baltimore Ravens do something innovative, suddenly it's Mike Bobo's not good enough, right? I mean, we've seen a few of those threads bouncing around all fall. But where do you think they are from a playmaker standpoint on the perimeter? Kind of go to make a play in a critical situation. What do you think they are offensively right now?
You know, Kirby, here's the thing, and I actually talked about this today. I'm glad you kind of broached this topic. Kirby has had this offense at Georgia. It's a Kirby philosophy. This is not a Mike Bobo or a Todd Monken. This has been Jim Chaney, James Coley, Mike Bobo, Todd Monken, all of them. They want to throw the ball to the open man, which everybody does, right? Nobody wants to throw the ball to a covered guy. But they want to say, all right, you're going to do this, we're going to throw it here. Or you're going to do that, we're going to throw it here. And that's great in theory. I think a lot of offenses work that way. They all have that element to them. But Georgia is, because of, you know, they came into the preseason and a guy Tennessee recruited, Ra-Ra Thomas, gets booted off the team before preseason. And Ra-Ra's a good ex wide out and a guy that brought a physical presence to them. Well, you're okay because you got Colby Young. You brought Colby Young in from Miami. Well, Colby Young goes and does something stupid off the field too, that they're trying to get the charges dropped and everything on that right now. Don't know if he's going to be back. But you lost the guy that was kind of the, okay, well, he'll step in for this guy. They don't have a Cedric Tillman type of challenge, you know, like catching the football in 50-50 situations right now. Dylan Bell can do it, and he is their best playmaker at receiver. And I think they've got to do a better job of finding ways to get 86 the football. And not necessarily from a, hey, is he open standpoint, but hey, let's run this quick slant out of a stack formation and get him open, get him a free release. I think they've got to do more of that because he's the guy that's consistently, you know, making plays for him. Dominic Lovett is too. I mean, he's a good player, but I think it would be one of those two. I will say this though, when Carson has needed a play against Texas, against Florida, to go ahead against Florida and to get the drive going against Texas, he's gone to Arian Smith. So they've got, I think Georgia's got weapons. I mean, I don't think this coaching staff has got the most out of this group. And I think sometimes that just happens. I'm not saying Mike Bobo's not a good coordinator. I think he does a pretty good job most of the time, but it hasn't worked for him in this offense this year, not with Carson Beck, not with anything. But Georgia's one of the best teams in the country at generating 20 and 30 yard pass plays. So they can generate plays in the pass game. They've just got to play cleaner football, and they got to figure out a way to get people blocked. And Tennessee's not a great recipe for trying to figure out how to get people blocked right now. They're pretty good up front.
You're talking about Mike Bobo, Tennessee fans' favorite assistant coach of all time is Alex Golish, and you know he's no longer here, so that's the reason for all the issues. Dylan Bell also a massive game against Tennessee a season ago, so he's going to be a guy that the defense is going to have to key on. Jake, thanks so much, man. Where, you know, if you're a Tennessee fan, a member of VolQuest.com, and they want to know all about Georgia, what do you guys got coming up this week over at Dogs HQ?
Man, we'll have a lot of content, dude. We'll talk X's and O's for Georgia. We'll talk X's and O's probably for Tennessee. Do that, you know, kind of with our Dogs HQ Plus show, which you can see over on our website or through written stuff. We'll have news on Georgia's injury situation all week long and kind of what Kirby has to say. And, we'll try to do it. Listen, we try to wake up every day over at Dogs HQ saying, can we do it as good as VolQuest does it? And sometimes we get close, but never.
Wow, you pulled your Kirby Smart card at the end on that.
Yeah, you did.
Well done. Well done, my friend.
Hey, we learn over here. We learn over here.
Hey, man, it's great to see you. Thanks for joining us tonight. Appreciate the update on the Bulldogs. We'll see you on Saturday.
You guys are awesome. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks, Jake. Appreciate you, man.
That is Jake Rowe over at Dogs HQ. I'm serious, too. I mean, I'm big on, you know, learning about all there is to know about your opponent. If you guys want to know all about Georgia, kind of the personnel, the injury situation, check out their work over at Dogs HQ throughout the week, just as you do VolQuest.com throughout the week. All right, Matt Ray is going to join us here in about 10 minutes or so, kind of get a perspective from on the sideline from last night. I want to go back to the game, Mississippi State game. Let's talk about some of those things that'll just, you'll pull your hair out, right, if you're a coach and a Tennessee fan. Red zone. We talked about the red zone so much, Brent. We wrote about it last week. Tennessee goes down there, and Dylan Sampson, two hands on the football, bracing for contact. You know, the guy just makes a hit, jars the football loose, fumbles at the 7-yard line. Boo Carter, you know, gets an interception, puts it right back on the 9 for the Tennessee offense. Tennessee stalls out 4th and goal from the 1 with Peyton Lewis in the game. If Peyton Lewis bounces it to the outside, that's a walk-in touchdown, is it not?
It is, to me, in my opinion. I mean, the defender, Miles Kitzelman's blocking, is supposed to block, jumps inside. He jumps inside of Kitzelman's inside shoulder, if you will, and bottled that up right there. And Kitzelman did what he's supposed to do. I mean, he just kind of went with him and walled him or washed him down, and Lewis didn't see it. That's a young running back, and he didn't bounce it outside. You can watch the replay and see Kitzelman's kind of like, wait a minute, what'd you go in there for? You know, like, you know, there's a lot of grass out there. I think that was a young running back making a mistake because he went where it was supposed to be blocked, but it wasn't able to be blocked that way because of the way Mississippi State jumped in and played that way. The interesting thing on the Sampson fumble, he did everything right, two hands on the ball. But it almost feels like when I rewatched it, like he was trying to truck that guy. And that's not really been like he's done a good job not taking big hits, right? Like kind of sidestepping or spinning or sliding a little bit. Like he kind of looked like, hey, I'm going to lower the boom on you here. And he didn't get low enough. The guy got lower than him and put the helmet right on the ball. It was a little bit. I mean, look, he's pushed the pile. He's got a lot of yards after contact. But, I mean, he doesn't have a whole lot of moments where he's just trucked a linebacker. You know what I mean? And or a safety. And that one felt a little bit different, like he was trying to truck that guy there for whatever reason. And that's just an unfortunate deal. The problem is with Dylan now, you got a fumble in three straight games. You know, and that's a bit concerning, you know, moving forward. And, you know, being on the road at night is going to be really interesting because this is a world apart from Oklahoma. This is not going to be anything like what you had at Oklahoma. So for everybody's talking about the crowd in Oklahoma, no offense to the Sooners, that place when they're good is not like just a loud electric, you know, atmosphere. It's not like a night SEC game in a lot of other places. So this will be a challenge if Nico's on the field or Gaston Moore, whoever's playing quarterback, that'll be a real challenge there to communicate. I think another challenge is going to be pass protection, Eric, because Lance Hurd doesn't have any of this experience, right? Night on the road. I mean, he didn't play at Oklahoma. He played in the Auburn game a year ago at LSU, but I don't think that was a night. If it was a night game, it was in Baton Rouge. I don't believe that was at Auburn for a night game. So this one will be different for him. You know, how does he handle crowd noise? How does Tennessee overall handle that? They did not handle it very well 2 years ago when they went down there. So how do they handle that noise? I don't think Georgia's as good as they've been. You know, this is that they seem more vulnerable. They're not as elite in the line of scrimmage, but they're still not a bad football team either. I am a little surprised it's a double-digit point spread right now, but you know, this is going to be a heck of a challenge for Tennessee come Saturday night.
Yeah, it definitely is. And I mean, Tennessee hasn't played well on the road at times under Josh Heupel for a number of different reasons, right? I mean, Georgia in 2022, you know, the moment might have been too big. It was so loud. They had operational issues there.
And that's Alabama. That was a really good Georgia team in 22. Yeah. They were really good.
They definitely were. You know, Alabama last year, Tennessee jumped out to a great start. I mean,
red zone.
Yeah,
red zone.
Settle for too many field goals, and it came back to get you. And then in the second half, the wheels just fell off. Like, the crowd noise was nothing in that game compared to, like, Georgia of 2022. So, you got that one. Tennessee, of course, got beat South Carolina, got beat Missouri last couple of years. So, for different reasons. So, just going on the road in general, where Tennessee's been so good at home, I believe, and you know, somebody can stat check me if they want to, but since 2022, I believe Tennessee's lost one game at home.
Lost to Georgia.
Yeah,
lost
Georgia. Georgia last year, one game. And so Tennessee's had such a great home field advantage. So going on the road, all that type of stuff. Plus, you throw into the fact that, you know, we'll see about Nico. What if it is Gaston Moore? He can run the offense. He's got a lot of confidence, but he's never been in an environment like that. Nico truly has never been in an environment like that. Lance Hurd, you know, up and down the list. So it's going to be a challenging environment for sure, but we knew that already. A lot of people want to know about Cam Seldon, Brent. Cam Seldon's been the forgotten man last couple of weeks, last couple of games. Deshaun Bishop wasn't available. You had Dylan Sampson that got banged up there for a little bit. Peyton Lewis is your two. But Cam Seldon goes in there, you know, for a couple of series. I think he had six attempts. Where's Cam Seldon in all this right now? Because, again, up until the – and I know there's two guys who are injured, but up until the other night, he truly was a forgotten man. Looked like he was going to go and be a redshirt.
Yeah, and I think I think that would have been the case and still would have been the case if Deshaun Bishop had been able to play. I'm not sure that Seldon would have gone. And now that you know he's not going to because of the number of games he's played, the question is, can you knock off the rust? Because I didn't think that his vision was – he looked like a guy who had not played a lot of football last night. I'm not saying he was bad, but he looked like a guy who didn't have a great feel for the game because he had not gotten a lot of work. So we'll see where he's at. Well, I think that, you know, the forgotten storyline going into this game right now is, where's Deshaun Bishop? You know, is he going to play this week? He's not out for the year. But is that ankle injury where he's at, is it going to be well enough for him to play this week? We'll see what that looks like, you know, when the injury report comes out. Because, again, I think this is a big game, Eric, and I think this is going to be a little bit of the cat and mouse stuff early in the week, that everybody's going to be good to go, and then we'll see later in the week how good to go everybody really is when it's all said and done, because I think there's going to be a little bit of that, a little bit of gamesmanship early in the week on this. Now, you have to change that gamesmanship because of the availability reports from the SEC starting on Wednesday night. Otherwise, I think everybody would be a game-time decision, right? Georgia would have about six. Tennessee would have about six game-time decisions on Saturday.
Well, and you might know. I mean, it's brand new, so maybe you don't know the answer to this, but you know better than I do. Like, in the words of the late, great Ken Sparks, we're all questionable, right? I mean, if I was Tennessee, if I was Georgia, everybody would be questionable on Wednesday, on Thursday, on Friday, and then that 90-minute before kickoff, I'd say, all right, probable, game-time decision. You know what? That's how I would handle it, and I'm sure – you know, if they look into that, maybe there's some fines in there. But, I mean, truly, you have two teams, and Jake did a good job of kind of, you know, the offensive line issues for sure. They're going through some injuries. We know about Tennessee with Nico, Dante Thornton, Deshaun Bishop, all those guys, Dylan Sampson. In terms of the cat and mouse, at least on Wednesday, man, I'd put everybody out there as questionable.
Well, and I think the one guy who does that in the league is Lane Kiffin. I mean, yes. You go look at Ole Miss, they had like 20 people on their injury report on Wednesday and Thursday. You know, now I think Ole Miss is – it's probably heard from the league about that, but they continue to do some of that stuff. And yeah, I mean, I think everybody's going to play a little bit of that, you know, down the stretch. Hey, pull up Ben Hall's question there about why Tennessee fans are assuming this is a loss. Understand what the reporter said about Kirby. They've not looked impressive most of the season. You're right. They have not, but they're at home. Tennessee has not played well down there. Tennessee has not played well on the road in quote big games at night. Okay, I know everybody points to LSU at noon, and that was a great win for Tennessee. But you look at their road losses, Florida, night, you know, Alabama was a day game where Tennessee let that game get away from them. There was a bad loss
to South Carolina, Missouri
at night, late afternoon game against Georgia, primetime deal. I mean, they just haven't played as well on the road as you would like for them to be. That's why I think that's why Georgia's got a big spread right now. And again, I mean, Georgia's back is completely to the wall. This is an Armageddon game. I mean, this is an all-in game for them. They have to win this football game because a three-loss Georgia team's out. But there's going to be too many two-loss teams in front of them. Nobody in this league's getting in with three losses.
SEC Nation says Alabama could.
Well, I just don't believe that.
I disagree. I
mean, now here, the only interesting thing with three losses is what do you do if you've got a two-loss team in the championship game that gets a third loss?
Yeah.
What do you do then? We'll see. But a three-loss team is not getting into the championship game because there's going to be too many two-loss teams in front. And so I think this is one of those deals where, you know, this is all the chips are in the table. That's what I'm saying about – I know what the spread is, but this is the same Kirby Smart that had his team believing they were underdogs in every game they played a year ago. I mean, they will be hair on fire out of the gate. Tennessee has to weather an early storm in that game, not just from the crowd noise. I think they have to weather Georgia's early storm because he's going to have that team running through a brick wall before they come out on the field for kickoff and get ready to play. Tennessee's got to settle in fast in this one.
Kind of going back to Ben's conversation, and I don't know if this is what he was referring to or not, but like when we're for the last couple of weeks and throughout November, we're going to be having that conversation. College football playoffs, 10-2. You know, which 10-2 team gets in, which 10-2 team, you know, loses, comparing resumes and all that. And Tennessee, of course, is, you know, 8-1 right now, doesn't have two losses. But when you look at that schedule, once you got past Alabama, you kind of looked at that schedule and said, okay, well, the most likely loss, if there is one, is Georgia. So I think during the 10-2 conversation, we've always talked about, like, if Tennessee is going to lose on the road to Georgia, if Tennessee loses to Georgia, because I mean, certainly you got to handle business against Mississippi State. Vanderbilt, you just did that. Vanderbilt's no gimme at the end of the season anymore, but it's always referred to like if there is a loss, it would be Georgia. Doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be, but I think that might have something to do with it as well. Going to bring on Matt Ray as well. Matt, hold on. Let me try. There we go. Matt Ray, you were down on the sideline, man. We got a lot of questions about Nico, obviously, and you know, well, yep. It's day by day type situation, but you were on the sideline. Did you see anything from Nico coming off the field, you know, go to the tent, you know, limp? I mean, did you see anything from Nico there at the end of the first half that led you to believe that he might not play in the second half?
No, I mean, you know, when he took that hit down in the end zone, obviously, you know, right outside the end zone, trying to get that ball in there. I mean, just kind of looked like, you know, head hung, didn't like the way that play went down. You know, now I didn't see the hit initially because once he got outside of the pocket, I saw the out breaking route. So I turned the camera towards that, and that's where the ball went. And, you know, I didn't see the hit initially. I had to watch it on replay. But then just kind of watching him throughout, you know, the rest of the play, I think there was maybe, are we going to go for it here? What are we doing here? I didn't see anything that indicated that he would not play in the second half. And then, you know, when I came out right as Tennessee was receiving the kick to start the second half. And the next thing I know, we're, you know, guys and Moore's lined up. So I definitely didn't expect that.
Matt, you also were down there seeing some of the other injury situations with Dante Thornton, Andre Kurek, some of those other guys. What did you see from Dante Thornton? I think that was late in the third quarter when he came out. Of course, they said it was an upper body, and we didn't see him again the rest of the game. But not only him, but you know, on the television broadcast, when I was rewatching it today, I saw Andre Kurek was on the sideline, just didn't have a helmet. From your vantage point, anything on those guys or anybody else?
Yeah, you know, I saw Andre Kurek kind of get folded up in a pile. I didn't see him again after that, but I didn't see anything after that that kind of suggested that he wouldn't be back to that point. You know, with Dante Thornton, he took a hit there on the sidelines, you know, tried to bounce up, and, you know, then he just kind of sat back down. You know, Tennessee was still right in the flow of the game. It happened right beside Josh Heupel. He kind of looked to the side, saw him. Tennessee then quickly got him back up and moved him back and started to assess him. It was hard to tell really what was wrong with Dante because he did bounce initially kind of right back up, and then he sat back down. But as you said, you know, broadcast indicated upper body injury there for him, but it was just tough to see what happened.
Yeah, an upper body injury, listen, we all know what those sort of mean, right? Because if it's they don't call a lot of shoulder injuries upper body injuries. You know, it's like, right, oh, he banged up his shoulder. You know what I mean? I mean, the upper body injury means neck and above is generally what those mean. So we'll see how that goes for them. Matt, when you look at this team, Tennessee, as they get ready to go into this game, there's obviously the injury concern across the deal. But what do you think is key? What do you think is key in this matchup outside of just Tennessee getting healthy? Obviously, the narrative changes if they're not healthy. But if Tennessee is pretty healthy, what do you think the matchup is in this game for Tennessee that's most favorable and most concerning?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it starts with, you know, if they can get healthy, then we'll see where it goes. If they're not healthy, if you go down there with Gaston Moore, then obviously that narrative changes. You know, but for me, I think Tennessee can have success running the ball against Georgia. And you haven't been able to say that about really any Georgia defense in some time. But, you know, we saw yesterday, you know, Georgia, Ole Miss kind of controlled the line of scrimmage really on both sides of the football. I thought from the defensive side of the football, Ole Miss dominated Georgia. I mean, it kind of felt like what it's been like watching Georgia for the last few years. When they needed to pin their ears back and go get one, they pinned their ears back and went and got one. You know, so we'll see, you know, kind of what that looks like. I think Georgia thinks that they're maybe getting a body or two back along the offensive line this week. We'll see what happens there. But I think Tennessee can run the football successfully against them. That's a nice matchup for them. And then, you know, I think defensively, you've just got to continue to do what you got to do. James Pierce, Omar Norman Lott, those types of guys getting home, creating pressure situations for Carson Beck, and, you know, hope he continues to make some ill-advised throws. I think the biggest mismatch for Tennessee is probably, you know, just the fact that they've got to continue to be able to create explosives. They created them against, you know, a time or two against Kentucky. They created them, you know, more last night, but this is still going to be the most talented defense you've faced to this point. Now, they have some issues, you know. If you can protect, you can create those explosives, but I think overall you've got to find a way to create explosives early. You've got Georgia, they're wounded, backs against the wall. It's a night game in Athens, and they're going to come out ready to go. I mean, they're playing for their life.
Noah chimes in and sends us a super chat. So, Noah, we really, really do appreciate that. He says, Eric, I've always wondered how you spilled your coffee in the press box. Chattanooga week, GBO, I hope Nico's okay. I think we all hope Nico's okay. Story is, I had a coffee. It was 98 degrees, but I had a coffee anyway. I was really Rob Lewis styling it that day. And I had the lid on, and it was so hot, the condensation was letting it drip. So I took the lid off, And, you know, later on, I just dropped it. I fumbled it, and it was really, really bad. It was the most embarrassing thing that happened in my life. And it was week one, game number one. I really started things off with a bang. So that is the story there. Noah, again, we appreciate the super chat.
Well, you left out the best part of that story was what Grant Ramey did
too. Oh, the next week? Absolutely. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. Grant Ramey rolls in, and right as kickoff is happening in Charlotte, he just quietly, without saying a word, turns and hands the VolQuest staff sitting in press row ponchos to cover themselves from Eric Kane's coffee spills, which is, you know, Grant Ramey's humor is just so good. I mean, his wit's so good. It's fantastic. So,
I was going to say, if you know Grant Ramey, that is so Grant Ramey.
Oh,
that
it's the most absolutely. Grant Ramey thing. Here's the thing I'm curious about. I want to ask both of you guys this question. When you watch Georgia and you look like, teams that have had success running the football, a lot of it's been outside. It's been outside zone. It's been, you know, kind of getting outside that three-man front. Tennessee, I'm surprised, has not run a ton of outside stuff. They've been very much between the tackles. So my question is, does Tennessee show a different wrinkle? Can they get outside in the run game? Do they need to get outside to be successful in the run game?
Matt, I don't think they need to. Certainly, I would like to see them, you know, hit outside the tackle a little bit more because, to Brent, you know, to his point, Tennessee's very much between the tackles. But that's kind of who Tennessee is. That's what Tennessee's always kind of been, you know, folding those tackles over, you know, pulling those offensive linemen, taking an H-back and slipping them in there for that split zone look. That's kind of who Tennessee is. And certainly Tennessee is a great running football team, already over 2,000 yards for the season. We know about Dylan Sampson. So I don't necessarily think that Tennessee has to do that to be successful, but having a new wrinkle, I mean, it's why you make money. It's why these coaches make so much money, to come in with a new wrinkle, big time games, get a different look, have another option. I would love to see something in that game plan this week to where they're hitting the perimeter or they're attacking the perimeter a little bit more.
Yeah, I think this week more so is one of those weeks that you need it. I don't think it's a have to. I think you can run the ball against Georgia in between the tackles, but I think you need it maybe a little bit more just to create some balance. You know, Tennessee's linebackers are struggling with their eyes at times still. I mean, we saw it last night. You know, Jeff Levy and, you know, did a good job of getting those linebackers looking in different places at different times. I think right now Georgia's linebackers, even, you know, as good as they've been at different times, they've struggled with that. They struggled with it against Alabama. You know, obviously there's a more designed quarterback run in play there with Jalen Milroe and the things that you can do. But I think just to be able to get outside and create some different looks can certainly help you find some balance earlier on in the game. So, yeah, I don't think you have to, but I think this weekend you need a wrinkle or two like that.
Joshua wants to know, does the Arkansas loss make us look bad? Yeah, I mean, I think so, Brent. You know, we said it that night that loss is going to continue to show up, you know, every single week throughout the season, especially now when you're looking at Tennessee being a one-loss team in the SEC, you know, what's to come, college football playoff positioning and all that. Clearly, you're a better football team than Arkansas, at least you think you are. But now we know that the offensive issues are a little bit more than what we thought they were at that time. But yeah, I mean, that Arkansas loss absolutely hurts Tennessee because, again, it's your only loss of the season.
Well, and this is the interesting part of all this college football playoff talk for me. And this is what, and I know the storyline changes every week because you got to keep the conversation going, right? And so Tennessee's, they don't have enough quality wins, right? They've got the Alabama win. That's a quality win right now. Ole Miss is the catch me out this week because they picked up a big quality win at home against Georgia. And then you hear about, well, Tennessee really laid an egg against Arkansas on the road. Who has a worse loss, Ole Miss or Tennessee? Ole Miss lost at home to Kentucky, who's not any good. But there's not a lot of narrative talk about that being that bad, how bad of a loss that is. You know, to do that on your home field – you know, it's one thing to go to the Baton Rouge and lose, okay? Although where LSU finishes, I don't know how good of a win that's going to ultimately end up looking like or bad of a loss or whatever that's going to look like. I mean, you did that on the road, Ole Miss did, and lost there. I'm just a little and again, I don't think Ole Miss is going to be real high in the playoffs. I don't think they're going to be in the playoff rankings. I don't think they're going to be one of the 12 this week. But I'm curious to see how much they jump, you know, and how much do they take into account that loss. Much the same way, like, where is Alabama going to be after the win? How big of a jump do they make this week? Because they're the catch meow, right? They get a lot of love that way. So I'm still trying, because Tennessee's not really been in this conversation, because the week they were in it, they were out of it the next week because they got, you know, just walloped at South Carolina. I'm just kind of curious to see the next couple of weeks what the storyline and the narrative becomes, particularly about the SEC, Matt, when you talk about the potential for so many two-loss teams out there.
Well, I mean, I think what's interesting is, yeah, Tennessee, I mean, that was an ugly night in Arkansas. You and I talked about that. It feels like that was a year ago, Brent. You said it last time. It feels like that was a year ago. It's been just a little over a month ago. But, you know, I mean, I don't know. Alabama never led in Nashville against Vanderbilt. Now, Vanderbilt's not a bad football team, but
here's the difference. Vanderbilt can score. Like, Arkansas can score. Kentucky can't. I think that's one of the things you point to in terms of, like, which loss is worse. Like, at least Arkansas can score. Kentucky can't.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Tennessee and Texas are both one-loss teams right now. Texas got shell-shocked at home by Georgia, and they don't have a win over a top 25 opponent currently. I mean, there's so many different narratives right now with the 12-team playoff and kind of what the SEC is, and there's still a couple of weeks of runway left here. It's only going to get crazier, and everybody's going to have a different viewpoint on it. But, I mean, to me, yeah, the Arkansas loss is a bad look for Tennessee, because you could be the number one or two team in the country right now if you take care of business. I think that's the worst part of that look. But as far as the loss itself, when you put it on paper, again, if it was Vanderbilt and Arkansas playing today, that point spread would be pretty close, you know, to pin it. And again, Alabama, who Tennessee beat head to head, never led in Nashville.
No.
I mean, so they're and then you've got the Kentucky Ole Miss. Just so many different things, I think, that kind of goes into this. I don't know. I don't think the Arkansas loss is as bad stacked up against some of those, but I think in terms of just looking at it from the Tennessee standpoint, yeah, it's ugly just because, again, you could be the number one or two team in the country right now.
When you're talking about things that need to happen for Tennessee to win between the hedges coming up this weekend, obviously run the football, need your starting quarterback out there. I mean, need to defend the run better, all that and more, but you gotta play discipline. You can't let emotions get the best of you. And Jay brings up a great point right here. Omar Norman Lott, is Rodney Garner going to get him under control? Stop with the unsportsmanlike penalties. It's like he's almost good for one. It's exaggerated, but it's like he almost gets one every single week. I mean, he's that guy that teeters on that line all the time. And, you know, you can't have one of those in a huge moment in Athens, and that could get you beat.
No, and I don't even know, and I'm not defending him in any way. I'm not sure he realizes some of the stuff he does, you know, when it happens. And I think that he has got to get himself back under control. And, hey, can we go a game where the defensive tackles can look to the right or the left and see the football and go, hey, I'm over the football. I need to back up.
Yes.
You know? I mean, like, I'm in the neutral zone when I put my hand in the ground here. Like, some of that stuff is just – and that's been kind of the maddening thing really the last 2 weeks for this defensive front. They were so – that defense was really good against Alabama. I mean, really good. Okay, maybe Alabama didn't play their best. I don't care that they were elite in what they did against Alabama. They haven't had that edge about them the last 2 weeks mentally. They've just not played as smart as they need to play. And it starts with little things like lining up onside, and then things like don't grab a guy's face mask and rip his helmet off. Don't even take a chance on kicking the football, right? Like yeah. In the Alabama game, which like you got to play with some control at this point in time. I mean, everybody's watching you. And when I mean everybody, future employers are watching you. You got to have some control on the field because that's going to come back to bite you. That's going to come back to bite you long term, but it's going to come back to bite this defense if you're not careful.
Tennessee and Georgia coming up this weekend. Tennessee and Mississippi State, that happened yesterday. Tennessee, of course, a 33-14 win. We have tons and tons of reaction, you know, mini podcasts from after the game. We got 10 things I think I learned from Brent. My big three, Grant Ramey wrote about 27 articles up there. We got a lot of coverage from Tennessee and Mississippi State. We're going to have plenty more for Tennessee and Georgia coming up this week with, you know, Rocky Top Roundtable, Stock Report, the matchup piece from Rob Lewis, all that and more. It's Brent, it is a great time happening right now at VolQuest.com because not only is it Tennessee-Georgia week, Tennessee basketball is happening right now and a huge win against Louisville. Plenty of conversation on the GQ and a lot more to come.
Yeah, no doubt. I want to ask Matt one question before we get out the door here. Obviously, Tennessee did not have any recruits in the house because of the restrictions. What does this weekend mean for Tennessee in recruiting? I'm sure Georgia night game is going to have a bunch of people there. Can this, if Tennessee were to go down there and have a really good night, how big of a recruiting win could that be for Tennessee with all the players that Georgia is expected to have in the house?
And how big of a weekend is it for Christian Gass?
It's a big weekend for Christian Gass. I won't be surprised if Shady Hayward's there too. It's going to be a big weekend for both of those guys. Now that's kind of been Georgia's hope, is to get them back and get them into town for Tennessee and try to make a point like, hey, you know, this is what we did to them. We took care of them on the field, and this is why you should be here. So it's a big weekend for those guys. They've been paying close attention to just mainly those two programs since the spring. I mean, that's really, you know, what it come down to for both of those guys. You know, so it'll be a big weekend for them, but it'll be a big weekend with a lot of other recruits. You're right, Brent. Georgia's going to have a lot of guys in-house this weekend, I would expect. I mean, you're going to have 26s, 27s that are national recruits, and, you know, this is a chance for Tennessee to go down there and show, you know, hey, this is who we are, and you know, this is what we can do against a team that, you know, is always going to be in the playoff conversation, it seems like, as long as Kirby Smart's there, and this is why we're going to be in the playoff conversation. So it can be a big week for Tennessee, you know, if they go down to Georgia and handle business.
And more on Tennessee recruiting, Trail Tidbits every Wednesday afternoon, BallQuest.com, from Matt Ray. He gets you set for everything you need to know that week on Tennessee recruiting. Like I said, so much going on at BallQuest.com. You don't want to miss out. If you're watching us and listen to the podcast and all that, every week we thank you. But if you're not a member over at BallQuest.com, you're just scratching the surface. There's so much more. I mean, you know, we got the best insider notes available on Tennessee. So come join us over at BallQuest.com and on the General's Quarters. Thank you guys so much for joining us here on the Rocket Side Rewind, presented by our friends over at Spivey King and Spivey LLP. Again, if you got a problem, let them find a solution for you. T&Trail Lawyers, that phone number or a free consultation is 423-245-4185. Again, 423-245-4185. And for a free consultation, Spivey King and Spivey LLP. All right. Appreciate you guys as always. We'll be back next Sunday night to recap Tennessee and Georgia. Until then, enjoy the rest of your week, everybody. This has been the Rocky Top Rewind.